From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, December 21st, 2015. And on this day, the decades-long ban on blood donations from gay men is lifted. But gay rights advocates say the FDA's policies on donations remain too restrictive. A national organization representing model aircraft enthusiasts is advising members to delay acting on a federal requirement to register their drones. And a Belfast shipyard strikes a deal that could bring more jobs to the Midcoast city's revitalizing waterfront. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by listeners like you and by Lee Auto Malls, serving Maine since 1936 and a proud supporter of MPBN Radio, with locations throughout the state and online at leeauto.com.
I'm Barbara Caridi. Today, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration lifted its lifetime ban on blood donations from gay men. The FDA now recommends that gay men be allowed to donate blood if they haven't had sexual contact with another man for at least 1 year. As Patty White reports, Maine's gay rights community is reacting to the change with subdued enthusiasm.
The lifetime ban on gay male blood donors had been in place since 1983, 32 years. So the new guidelines are a step in the right direction, says Matt Moonen of Equality Maine.
But it's still, even with this update, is a policy that is way out of date with science and where we should be on this issue.
Shrinking the deferral period for when a gay man can donate blood from never to after 1 year of abstinence may sound like a huge change. But Moonen says that 1 year wait time will still prevent a large number of gay men from donating blood.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little skeptical of what kind of impact this will have. Of course, it's good to expand the universe of people who are able and willing to give blood, because we all know that donations are needed all the time.
Gay rights activists have pushed for an end to the ban for years. Michael Quint of Portland organized a local gay blood drive event last year as part of a national effort to push the FDA to change its policy.
We had people come and donate blood on our behalf. And we worked with the Red Cross. The Red Cross was very supportive of our effort.
Nearly a decade ago, the Red Cross, the American Association of Blood Banks, and America's Blood Centers called the lifetime ban on gay male blood donors, quote, medically and scientifically unwarranted. In a written statement issued Monday, those organizations applauded the FDA's change in policy. For its part, the FDA cited the fact that several other countries, including the UK and Australia, have a 12-month wait period for gay male blood donors. And according to the FDA, studies found no change in risk to the blood supply. But Michael Quint says he still doesn't think a long wait period makes sense.
They're still going to thoroughly check the blood that's donated. And why we just can't give blood, it's beyond me.
The Red Cross says it will take several months for blood centers to implement the new policy. Meanwhile, Quint, Moonen, and other activists say they will continue to push the FDA to lift the ban entirely. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Meanwhile, a Maine company is using a crowdfunding campaign to launch a high-tech thermometer. Brunswick-based Check My Temp is marketing a thermometer that's worn like an armband and monitors temperature, body position, and movement. The information is sent to a smartphone app that allows users to receive a detailed history, including fever spikes. Company officials say the device is being initially marketed to new parents, but they say it can also be useful in elder care, post-op care, and fertility monitoring. The thermometer was designed and engineered in Brunswick. And it's that time of year when high school seniors begin planning for college. The Finance Authority of Maine will hold a series of workshops in January to help students apply for financial aid when pursuing a higher education. Myla Tappan of FAME says the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or FAFSA, gives students access to substantial federal loans,
which can range, depending on the student's grade level, from $5,500 per year upward. So just in terms of those programs, that's a lot of money.
Tappan says FAFSA also opens up doors to access financial aid offered by a particular school, but those funds are often limited, so she recommends that students apply as early as possible after the start of the new year. On Friday, we reported on a new federal regulation requiring that drones be registered with the Federal Aviation Administration. Now, a national organization representing more than 175,000 model aviators is advising its members who operate multi-rotor drone devices to delay that registration. The Academy of Model Aeronautics says it wants more information from the FAA and is also waiting until the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia weighs in on a petition seeking exclusion from the rule. A.J. Higgins has more.
This is the sound of a two-seater aircraft, in this case, a Cessna 152, taking off. And this is the sound of a device that you may hear buzzing around your living room on Christmas Day. In this case, it's a multi-rotor 10-inch replica of the Star Wars Millennium Falcon. The first one will probably set you back around $35,000. The second is closer to $90, and while these two machines may seem pretty different from each other, the Federal Aviation Administration takes a different view.
The FAA considers unmanned aircraft to be the same as manned aircraft, so users would be required to comply with all of the federal aviation regulations.
And Kathleen Bergen of the FAA says that means these small drones must be registered with the FAA. The rule affects so-called drone-type flyers or unmanned aircraft systems weighing between 8.8 ounces and 55 pounds. They can be registered online with a $5 fee, and all model aircraft must be registered by February 19th, and then re-registered every 3 years after that. The FAA is trying to boost compliance by waiving the registration fee through January 21st. But the largest organization in the country that represents model aviators is saying not so fast.
AMA has been clear about our disappointment with the new rule for UAS registration.
Allison Haley is the communications director for the Academy of Model Aeronautics, an organization representing the interests of more than 175,000 model aviators who believe that their pastime should not be grouped in with commercial aviation. In a statement to members, Haley said AMA's executive director, Dave Mathewson, is asking the group's members to hold off on registering their model aircraft until they are otherwise advised or until February 19th, the FAA's legal registration deadline.
From the beginning of this process, we have argued that registration makes sense at some threshold and for those operating outside of a community-based organization or for commercial purposes. But for our members who have been flying safely for decades and who already register with AMA, we strongly believe that the new interim rule is unnecessary.
At Granite Leisure, a hobby shop in Oakland, owner Kevin Purnell says the registration issue has been a sore point among many customers who hold mixed feelings on the issue.
You know, some say they're going to continue to fly like they always have. Others say it's the beginning to the end. I feel some of these guys aren't going to want to fly. They're not going to want to pay the money. I know it's not expensive, but it's just principle for some of them. And again, some of the other ones, they're going to continue to go on like they have and keep flying and enjoying the hobby.
Purnell said many of his customers support the position taken by the AMA, which is that the FAA is establishing new standards and operating criteria to which model aircraft operators have never been subject to in the past. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Power grid operators in New York and New England have launched a system to streamline the exchange of electric energy over transmission lines and improve the flow of power between the two markets. The New York Independent System Operator and ISO New England say the coordinated transaction scheduling system introduced last Wednesday will make more efficient use of transmission lines by allowing utilities, generators, and others in the wholesale energy market to get access to the lowest cost source of power. A Midcoast shipyard has struck a deal with a Norwegian ferry company to build energy-efficient carbon fiber ferries for sale in the U.S. The partnership, called Arcadia Alliance, will market the ferries to state and federal agencies that want to replace aging aluminum vessels. Front Street Shipyard has contributed to a renaissance along Belfast's waterfront since it opened in 2011. As Jay Field reports, the yard now employs more than 100 people and could add as many as 50 to 100 more jobs once the ferry partnership gets up and running.
A fishing trawler out of Stonington and a whale watch vessel from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, await repairs in the yard outside Building 5 at Front Street Shipyard. J.B. Turner, the yard's president and GM, says the building is scaled to work on large vessels.
Right now we're in one of the bays of Building 5. The doors lift up 40 feet, and we can walk boats in and out.
Overhead cranes tower above a 20-inch thick slab of concrete that fills the building with radiant heat and supports four private yachts in various stages of retrofitting and repair.
They're all made out of different materials. The two in the forward end of the bay are fiberglass. The two in the aft end of the bay are made out of all aluminum.
Aluminum and steel are popular boat-building materials. The hulls made from these metals are stiff. They do well in choppy, rough seas and are considered extremely safe, qualities that have made them the go-to material for ferry construction. But J.B. Turner says there are also drawbacks to aluminum ferries.
Aluminum is very difficult to hold paint. It corrodes. The welds often crack over time as the boat's working, especially on the catamarans where you have two hulls kind of working independently.
A few years ago, as Front Street looked for ways to continue expanding the boat building side of its business, Turner began having conversations with friend and colleague Martin Grimness about building a different kind of ferry. Grimness, who was born in Norway, helped found the Maine Composites Alliance. And for years, he's raced sailboats made from lightweight composites like carbon fiber and fiberglass.
You can achieve the same strength and the same stiffness from a carbon fiber laminate as that of steel, yet weigh substantially less.
A more lightweight carbon fiber ferry, for example, would use much less fuel than steel or aluminum-hulled boats. It would also be less likely to corrode. Grimness had long thought that Maine could lead the way in building these more energy-efficient vessels.
We just need to bring the technology here. And the technology is here for the private market, but not for the commercial market.
After doing some research and consulting with the U.S. Coast Guard, Turner and Grimness decided to look for a partner to begin building so-called T-class ferries that carry up to 150 passengers. Grimness introduced Front Street to Brothers O, a Norwegian shipbuilder that's been making carbon fiber ferries since 2002. Front Street has signed a memorandum of understanding with Brothers O to begin building ferries for the U.S. market under the name Arcadia Alliance.
Assuming that all of our refit and service yard work keeps going, I can see easily adding 50 to 100 jobs to build the ferries, you know, separate from the rest of the yard.
J.B. Turner says the ferries will likely cost between $5 and $8 million apiece. The next challenge will be marketing the vessels to state and municipal agencies and private ferry operators throughout the U.S. In January, the sales job will begin with a trip to the Passenger Vessel Association's annual trade show in Washington, D.C. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Meanwhile, Maine's jobless rate is the lowest it's been since 2002. The State Labor Department says Maine's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for November was 4.1%, down slightly from October's 4.3% and significantly lower than the 5.5% rate a year ago. The number of unemployed Mainers has dropped by 10,500 over the past year, says Maine Department of Labor economist Glenn Mills.
I would characterize things as continuing to improve, continuing to recover, but the recovery is not complete, and that's true nationally as well.
State officials say job gains in the past year have been almost entirely in the private sector. primarily in professional and business services, hospitality, retail trade, and healthcare. And this day is the winter solstice, which means it's the shortest day of the year and the longest night. In Portland, the occasion was marked this afternoon with a vigil to remember homeless people who have died. The event was organized by the social service agency Preble Street. Executive Director Mark Swan says the vigils become more sad and more frustrating every year.
We've got to do some things different. It's not just tragic, it's just ridiculous at this point that we've got people dying.
A similar vigil was also held at Trinity Church in downtown Lewiston. And this is also the first day of winter, and the relatively warm weather has New Englanders feeling wary. Last winter began much the same way, but the season eventually featured plenty of snow, including a record-breaking 9 feet in Boston. But forecasters say the phenomenon known as El Niño will continue to bring unseasonably warm temperatures to the region, so much of the above-normal precipitation expected this winter will fall as rain rather than snow. And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, December 21st, 2015. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Patty White, A.J. Higgins, Jay Field, Mal Leary, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to know what you think about the program. You can tell us by emailing us at tdim@mpbn.net. This day's Maine Calling was about the many different options available for heating your home. If you missed it, you can hear it anytime at mainecalling.net. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at MPBN News, thanks for listening.